Well, spring is memorable in a Wisconsin woodland garden, but what about now? Well, up next, we're going to take a look at what natives to add for year-round interest. We're welcoming Dallas Maloney to Garden Talk today. She is co-founder of Pretty Wild, a native plant nursery in Milwaukee. Do you have a shaded area in your garden that you'd like to make into a native woodland garden? Well, what questions do you have about creating it? Give us a call, 800-642-1222. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Hi, Dallas. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. It's really nice to be on. Thank you so much.
You bet. Well, I'm looking forward to it because I love a woodland garden. But before we get there, I want you to just tell us a little bit about your business. It's very unique. I love that you found an area that needed something and you decide to fill it. So tell us how you got started.
Well, we've been, my partner and I, Burton, we run it together and we've been like incredibly interested in plants our whole relationship pretty much, and especially like germinating them and like, you know, bringing life to seeds and all sorts of stuff. And we started getting out into the wild more and more and just fell in love with native plants and just wild plants in general, you know, ones that haven't been genetically modified at all and just are like the way nature intended, we could say. So yeah, and then we noticed when we started gardening at our current house about 8 years ago, just how far we had to drive to find native plants or order them online. And yeah, we started propagating a ton and decided to start a nursery about 3 years ago and built a greenhouse and have been working at it. And we opened this June and it has just been like such a wonderful experience. Like, it's just amazing talking to people about plants and making suggestions and meeting neighbors who have, you know, walked by for years, but now finally, you know, like see more pictures of the yard from the, you know, inside the garden and not just from the fence line. And yeah, it's been completely, completely amazing.
Yeah. Your business is really, I mean, you hate to kind of use the pun, but it's grown organically, which your business is. And you're in River West in Milwaukee area. So if anybody knows that area, it's not like you have big, huge lawns and whatnot. I mean, it's a relatively smaller area. It's an older area of the city. So what about that area attracted you? And why did you think that was a great place to grow native plants?
Well, one of the biggest reasons that we wanted to grow native plants is because we live about two blocks from the Milwaukee River Greenway. Mm-hmm. And we have seen the spread of common garden plants into the woodlands there. And we, you know, right when we moved in, before we were even, you know, super into native plants at all, we were just like, well, we want to make sure that nothing that we plant will, you know, spread or harm the ecosystem down there. Mm-hmm. And River West in general has an incredible garden culture and community, especially when we moved here in about 2012. There were like huge community gardens, and our garden Facebook page is incredibly busy, and everyone is always like sharing plants and seeds, and it's really, really great community for gardening.
So what do you actually sell?
We sell straight species plants that are native to southeastern Wisconsin. So no cultivars, nothing like that, no nativars. But we probably have about 100 or more species in our nursery beds now, and probably about 50 available, like in stock on our website right now. And we sell everything from, you know, like spring ephemerals all the way to goldenrod and asters and grasses. We want to get more shrubs and whatnot, but they take a long time to grow. So there's currently little tiny guys right now. But yeah, we really hope to find more uncommon ones or things that are harder for nurseries at a large scale to carry. Mm-hmm. Maybe because, you know, some of these spring ephemerals can take 3 years just to germinate. So it can be quite tricky to grow them at scale. And we're such a small scale that we don't mind putting in the time to, you know, find things that are like really interesting and unique and endangered.
Right. Now, for those who aren't familiar, tell us the difference between a straight species versus a cultivar.
So a straight species is, you could also just call a wild species. It's never had any human intervention as far as breeding or, you know, selected traits, or obviously now there's GMOs and whatnot, but they are the color that they've always been, the shape that they've always been, and it's especially important for insects who use them as their host plant, because sometimes cultivars, they can't see it if you change the flower color. So like Harvest Moon Echinacea, let's say, a bee might not even be able to register the color of the flower if their UV range can't see it. So we like to focus on straight species because of that. Mm-hmm. Just the pollinator benefit and the ecological benefit. And we also just like that you can learn something from it. You know, you can see its evolutionary traits. You can see, you know, maybe it grew somewhere where it was really dry, so it started having these tiny hairs on its stem to reduce wind and hold in moisture. And there's just, yeah, so much you can learn from a straight species. If you start getting interested, it's like just a rabbit hole of learning about botany and evolution and whatnot.
Well, obviously you fell down that rabbit hole, and so that's wonderful.
Definitely. Because
like you said, there really wasn't any place in your area where someone could go and buy a native plant without having to send for it.
Yeah, the closest to us would be Johnson's Nursery, and they're incredible. But quite far away, especially a lot of people, like myself included, don't have a car when we live in River West. So getting all the way out to Cedarburg or Menominee Falls can be quite a trek. So, yeah, having a hyper-local, tiny little nursery, it serves the community really well. But we've had customers from Racine and all over. I don't really know about the native plant availability, you know, in Illinois right on the border there, but I know in Milwaukee, at least, it's a pretty far drive to get any native plants.
Sure. Well, and like most of us, going to a new nursery is an adventure anyway. So it's a destination thing. So,
for sure. We have our median, or we like to call it a health strip, like the parkway in between the road and the sidewalk, fully planted up. It's like 1,000 square feet and full sun. So whenever someone comes to pick up their plants, I'm always like, oh, don't forget, like, go check out the health strip. There's always something new blooming. And yes, we saw a hummingbird moth in there the other day, and that was so special.
Oh, I love hummingbird moths. They are so gorgeous.
It's otherworldly, like really is.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's get to what we want to talk to you about, a woodland garden. So someone asked me, what is a woodland garden? So why don't you give us a description?
Well, a woodland garden is, I guess, a forest, which would be something that we're all very familiar with, I would assume. Mm-hmm. But, you know, on like a more landscaped scale, a woodland garden is anywhere that gets very little sun and generally is under a large deciduous tree. That's the gardens that we have anyways. We have some very large deciduous trees, and the area under there we like to call our woodland garden. If you were planting in like more of an evergreen foresty area, that would have different needs and whatnot, because it would be probably even shadier year round, even in the winter. Mm-hmm. We have two large maples and a very large linden tree and a box elder tree that unfortunately is on its way out. But
they don't live long, so.
No, and it's a very haphazardous area that it's, we consider anything that would be really shady with a large tree near it a woodland garden.
Okay.
And they can be really difficult places to plant. A lot of shade plants are used to more moisture, which makes sense. You know, they're not getting evaporated by the sun. But if it's under a large deciduous tree, like our linden tree is so thirsty that the soil beneath it is actually dry all summer. Even when it rains, it'll be dry shortly after.
Mm-hmm.
So combined with the very little sunlight and sometimes drier shade, it can be a tricky place to plant.
So what are your go-to plants for underneath those trees in that woodland area?
Our go-to, I would always start with like a base layer of sedges. Those are carex species that to a lot of people might look like grass, but they are usually there's so many different native carexes that it's hard to lump them all into one, but they would often have, get maybe a foot and a half tall, and they like sway in the wind, and they grow in clumps, not like a grass that forms a turf.
Mm-hmm.
So they always have their own distinct shape, despite it being maybe a carpet of them. They all still, you can see their form, and it's just very, very beautiful. It naturalizes incredibly well. It looks just like a gorgeous woodland meadow, and they form like a nice mat that prevents weeds. If you're under a deciduous tree, you'll be used to pulling hundreds and hundreds of little maple saplings every spring.
Oh, yes.
And the sedges, they grow together and weave themselves so nicely that it really prevents those deciduous tree seeds from being able to germinate. And one of the biggest things with these woodland understory trees and whatnot are... Have you heard of the term soft landings?
Not for in this particular case, no.
So soft landing is basically just like having some leaf litter and plants beneath a large deciduous tree, because things like oak trees especially are like the premier keystone species.
Mm-hmm.
So an oak tree is a host to like 500 to 900 different butterflies and moths.
Wow.
And they're just such an important species. And these caterpillars, they are eating the leaves of the oak tree, and then they come down to the ground level to pupate before they become butterflies. And they live in the leaf litter right below a tree,
mm-hmm.
or in the sedges and the plant material there. And these soft landings are really important, because if you have a traditional lawn that goes right up to your trees, it's often pretty devoid of an area for them to pupate and grow into butterflies. So the sedges, which we love, and they're honestly, they're incredibly attractive. Like, I think people who get into native plants, sedges are kind of like the gateway plant.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
It's just like so similar to lawns, but also like, oh, it's ecologically better and a lot prettier than a lawn, and no maintenance, of course. So we like to do pretty much a ground layer of sedges before mm-hmm. Plugging in any other flowering plants or ephemerals, and getting that just like a really nice ground cover. And then we like to start plugging in the more fun stuff like ephemerals and, wild geraniums or columbine and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the spring ephemerals are like by far the earliest blooming plants in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Every year.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten our bloodroot sometimes like end of February blooming, which is crazy.
Yes, it is. Considering what can all come after February, especially. And for
right.
those that aren't sure about that, ephemerals are the plants that bloom in the spring and then they kind of disappear. So.
Yep. And some of them don't. I'm not really sure of the mm-hmm. Classification sometimes, because something like Solomon seal will be considered an ephemeral, but the leaves do stay up year round. But
yeah.
You know, it's still like, you know, you have your most excitement and your most anticipation for the garden, and your hopes and dreams
yeah.
are at the highest very early in the, or late winter even.
Mm-hmm.
And these spring ephemerals are just so special and so beautiful, and they all flower before the leaves come on the trees in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
So you can often have just like just a tapestry of color and beauty before it is even spring on the calendar.
Right. So besides the hedges or the sedges. in the fall, and like right now and into fall, is there any other thing that you recommend?
Well, the great thing about sedges is they are more cool season.
Mm-hmm.
So they start growing in the spring and then they start growing again right now when everything else is looking really tired.
Ah.
The sedges put on new green growth and mm-hmm. they look so beautiful. So those really, really help fill in, you know, our ferns are looking tired and crispy. Everything's had a long year, but the sedges are just starting to green up again and look so lush. So we love those in the fall.
Uh-huh.
And then things that have berries on them, especially like the red bane berry, that'll add a lot of color in this time of year when mm-hmm. that area, like I said, it's looking pretty crispy after this long droughts we've had this year.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Things like that, or okay. Blue cohosh, things with some texture and some berries.
Mm-hmm.
We also love understory trees, which I think a lot of people overlook for shade gardens. You know, you have these 50-foot oaks or maples, and they're so high up, but these understory trees that we love are kind of more of a human scale, and you can see the flowers, you know, eye level, and they have a lot of berries. Like our dogwood pagoda right now is covered in gorgeous blue berries.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's just a great nesting spot, and I love it because sometimes, you know, the height of a tree is so large and then mm-hmm. it doesn't really fit in with the rest of your landscaping, but these understory trees provide like a nice little structure one step down to like slowly work everything together, which is great.
Yeah, that's a great observation. I love that. Well, we've got a phone call here. Patrick in Rhinelander has been patiently waiting. So go ahead, Patrick, with your question.
Hey there. Thanks for taking the call. Maybe a little bit off topic, but I'm up here in Norman, Wisconsin, Oneida County. And I've been fighting a decade-long battle with the deer. And I'm sure probably down the Milwaukee River natural areas, you're probably getting a deer problem down there too. And I'm looking for deer-resistant plantings. And I'm very intrigued by this dogwood you just mentioned. How does that fare against the deer? And right now my plantings are towards Ligularias, that's one thing that they're not eating. Astilbe, I think you pronounce it, a few other things, but, you know, everything else. And if I try to do a pollinator garden, it gets decimated. So even all of our native plants, I do Joe Pye weed, I do bee balm, you name it, they eat it. So do you have any recommendations from your experience down there? I think there is a deer population down there, too.
I live in such an urban area that we don't have a deer problem, but it's definitely something I consider a lot when I make recommendations for other people. So are you looking for full sun to shade all over across the board?
Yeah, across the board. I have the gamut, so I can do some full sun, but most of it's partial to heavily shaded.
Okay. I've always heard the recommendation that if you surround the tastier plants in like spiky or super, super aromatic plants, that the deer will tend to avoid them. So if you put your aster, let's say, for example, that's really tasty to deer, surrounded by maybe like a nodding onion or a hyssop or even like rattlesnake master, that can be quite spiky, that the deer avoid it. Like I said, I don't have actual experience with deer, but I've always heard of that. And then for deer-resistant plants in the woodlands, I know that doll's eyes, those are another one that have, like, really beautiful berries. I know that deer don't really like those. And milkweeds are also toxic to most herbivores. Do you have much milkweed where you are?
Yeah, I did a lot of plantings of different varieties of milkweeds. They got decimated as well.
They got decimated as well. Okay, well, sorry, I don't have much more help with the deer problem being so urban.
Wow, I can't believe they're eating the milkweed too. They must be really hungry, Patrick. My gosh. Wow.
Do you have perhaps like a hedgerow surrounding your property or anything like that? I would consider that if you had the ability to. There's some native crab apple trees that form quite a thicket that deer can't really penetrate very well. And then things like the native raspberries and things that are spiky in that nature, but also just elderberries and all sorts of twigs and thickets to create just like a physical barrier for them. I've heard people have a lot of good luck with that.
Okay, keep experimenting, Patrick. I guess that's all we can say.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's got some, has found some things, though, that work. So more of those.
Yeah, deers are tricky. Even in our yard, we have, you know, just tiny bunnies that don't really seem to bother our native plants much, luckily.
Mm-hmm.
They prefer the chicory and all the English weeds that we have, dandelions and whatnot. So we've been very lucky there.
Yes, well, that's good because they can be pretty devastating, that's for sure. So just quickly, we only have a couple more minutes left, but tell us some of the things that you do, some of the services that you offer besides the nursery.
So we also do garden design and consultations. We love water features, especially like ones that you can swim in. We love like recreation ponds. We swim in our pond pretty much year round. We do cold plunges in it in the winter.
Ooh.
And we always say like if we ever moved, it would be the very first thing we do, like before painting the walls in the house or anything, we would be out there digging a pond. So it has added more quality of life than anything else. So yeah, we love doing ponds and all sorts of edible and native plantings together.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, mainly that, consultations and design and then native plants mainly.
Okay. And your email or your website is Pretty Wild Nursery, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
PrettyWildNursery.com, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you've got... Go ahead.
Sorry, Instagram is the same, Pretty mm-hmm. Wild Nursery.
Okay.
And Facebook as well.
Yeah. And there's a lot of pictures and there's a lot of things you can order. You can pick them up there and see those cool gardens that you have out in front of the house too. So what are you looking forward to for next year? This is, you know, you're just kind of starting here. So what's going to be the big thing for next year for you?
Oh, we are so excited for the spring ephemerals next year. This year, we didn't open until June 21st, which is obviously very, very late in the garden season.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to rebuild our front porch and all sorts of little things got in the way. But next year in probably mid-April, we'll start offering bloodroot and some of our very favorite plants that we look forward to more than any other we will have available, which is really, really exciting. We've been planting and filling the shady nursery beds this year with just tons of wild geranium and Jack in the Pulpit and just so much fun stuff.
Yeah, there are some beautiful ones. Like you said, those ephemerals are just amazing. But it does take a while for them to grow. So you have to be patient. Yeah.
We've been just trying to germinate the seeds for some for 2.5 to 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I admire your patience. And thank you so much for being with us, Dallas. We'll definitely have you back again and we can talk about some more, when we have a little more time, some more native gardening plants and we can get into some more areas there.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You bet. We've been talking with Dallas Maloney from the Pretty Wild Nursery in Milwaukee. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Jeff Robbins for being our technical director today and Joel Patnod for taking the calls. I'm Jill Nadeau.